So today I had planned to talk about photon-baryon collisions. Last time that's where we ended. Right, so my original notes I think would have taken up like more than a day, for deriving the various expressions, baryon collisions. Okay, and so therefore, instead of going through this in detail, my plan today just is to sketch the argument. Okay, the full derivation is in these books I mentioned, like Dodelson, probably also in Baumann's notes. Okay, so good. So just a sketch for today. So to remind you, the collision integral is just the right-hand side of the Boltzmann equation. All right, so we had written dFdt is some collision integral. Okay. So what does this mean? This just means a sum over all the possible interactions for particles at some location x with some momentum p. Now, for the observed CMB photons, okay, we are going to be mainly interested in times near recombination, okay, because CMB last scattering happens around the time of recombination. Okay, so these correspond to redshifts of around 1,000 or so when the photon temperature is like below an electron volt. And at that time, the dominant interactions for the photons is just, is just Compton scattering off of the electrons. Okay, so this process just looks like E plus photon produces another, the same electron and photon in some different momentum state. Okay, so for some photon of some momentum p, this collision integral just tells us all the possible ways to produce a photon in that momentum state p, and also corresponds to all the ways that a photon in that momentum state p can be removed, right? Okay, so therefore, to compute this, we have to sum over every possible kind of interaction that can generate a photon of that momentum p. Okay, so that involves therefore summing over all possible states for the other participants in those interactions. Okay, so for example, so for this sort of interaction, suppose that our incoming electron has some momentum, call it q prime, the photon has some momentum p prime, the outgoing electron has some momentum q, and the outgoing photon has some momentum p. And we're trying to evaluate the rate of change of the distribution function at this momentum p. Okay, so therefore, that will involve some integral over all possible q, p prime, and q prime, right? Okay, so schematically, we can write that integral is something like, some integral over d prime, dq prime, d3q. Okay, and there's factors of 2 pi's and things like that, energies as well that I will skip over. Okay, okay, good. So the rates at which these sort of reactions will occur will depend on how many electrons we have in state q prime, how many photons we have in state p prime. Okay, so therefore, in the integrand, we'll have terms that look like, okay, so again, a bunch of stuff, but the key factor that I'm talking about is the distribution function for the photons evaluated at state p prime, the distribution function for the electrons evaluated at state q prime, okay, and then times some stuff. Okay, we'll also have phase space factors for the outgoing states. Okay, so for example, for the electron, we can have Pauli blocking, okay, which will look some. Oh, I've already run out of room. Okay, so that'll look something like, 1 minus f electron at q. Okay. Similarly, we'll have, stimulated emission for the photon at p. So that'll be something like 1 plus f photon at p.
Can I just ask something?
Yeah.
We're writing the Boltzmann equation for photon right now, for example, and then the collision part, the right-hand side.
The right-hand side is the collision part.
Photons that participate in any kind of collision process.
We're computing the rate at which we can generate photons in momentum p at location x. Okay, good. And so doing that involves summing over all possible incoming states that can have an interaction that produces the photon of the type that we're counting. Okay? Okay, good. And so clearly that rate will depend on how many incoming photons there are with this momentum, how many incoming electrons there are with this momentum, Pauli blocking for the outgoing electron, this Bose enhancement for the outgoing photon. Okay?
This right-hand side would be the same when we write the Boltzmann equation for baryons as well, for electrons as well.
Good, so that's coming, that's right. Okay, good, yeah, exactly, that's coming. All right, okay, good, yes, you've already anticipated one point I was getting to, which is that the same sort of terms will appear in the collision integral for the electrons. Yeah, okay, good, yeah. Okay, right. Okay, so one simplification we can make, though, is that the occupation numbers at this time, at these low energies, are small compared to one. So therefore, both of these terms we can just approximate as just being one. Okay, so therefore, I will just erase them. What else? Okay, good. So then all this will multiply some sort of amplitude squared for these sort of scattering processes. And I will just schematically write that as some amplitude squared. Okay, with some room that I'm leaving for a reason. And so in practice, on this amplitude squared will be something like the Thompson cross section times some factors. And those factors I will then just absorb into this unspecified bracket here. We also have to enforce momentum conservation and also total energy conservation. And we can do that just by multiplying, just by Dirac delta functions. Okay, so often delta function and enforcing total momentum conservation. Oh, wrong way. So P plus Q minus P prime minus Q prime. Okay. And also a Dirac delta function in energy enforcing total energy conservation. EP plus EQ minus EP prime minus EQ prime. Okay, so this is telling us the rate at which we are producing photons in momentum state P. We'll also have a term corresponding to removing photons in momentum state P. Okay, the same sort of interactions will take place. Okay, so that rate, of course, will depend on the number of photons in P, the number of electrons in Q, and since we are removing photons of this state, there'll be a minus sign. Okay, so minus F of P, F electron of Q. Do I have a prime? Yeah, I do have a prime. Okay. Oh, sorry, it's already have primes, sorry. Okay, good. What else, was there anything? Okay, right, yeah, and the key point is that, this amplitude squared for the reverse process is the same as the amplitude squared for the forward process just by time reversal symmetry. Okay, good. Right, so again, I'm being very, very simplistic here. What's next? Okay, so now the next thing we'll do is to use this momentum conserving delta function to do one of the momentum integrals. Okay, so I'll do the Q prime integral. And so this delta function then sets this Q prime to just Q plus P minus P prime, okay, as a vector. Okay, and then I've done the Q prime integral. Okay, the key physical insight now to making progress on this is to note that the electrons are much heavier than the photons at this time, okay? So again, this time is when the photon temperature is is like 0.3, the temperature is, is small compared to, to one electron volt. In comparison, the rest mass of the electrons is like half a mega electron volt, okay? And so therefore, the electrons are moving really slowly at this time, and they're much heavier than the photons, okay? And so intuitively, we can think of this, process of Compton scattering of photons off of these slow-moving heavy electrons. Intuitively, we can think of this as sort of like, bouncing ping pong balls off of bowling balls, right? And so you know that if you bounce a ping pong ball off of a bowling ball, it'll bounce off with about the same energy that that it came in with, right? So all that changes just is the direction of the momentum, the energy of, the ping pong ball doesn't change very much. And similarly, so the bowling ball's energy doesn't change very much. Okay, so what that means for us is that the photon energy doesn't change very much. So EP is approximately equal to EP prime. And similarly for the electron, EQ is approximately equal to EQ prime. If you work out the kinematics in detail, okay, so it's easy to show that the change in the energy is approximately given by Q over M for the electron dotted into P minus P prime. Okay, and of course, electron momentum divided by its mass, that's just the electron.
Electron velocity.
Velocity, right? Okay, good. So then I'll just write this as V electron. Okay. And again, right, so the point is that the electron velocity is tiny compared to one. So therefore, this change in the energy is therefore tiny compared to the photon energies, is tiny compared to the electron energies. Okay. So then, okay, good. So then, so we'll use this fact that this change in the energy is so tiny. We'll use that, therefore, now, to approximate this integral, okay? So what we'll do is to Taylor expand this delta function, okay? So we'll write this delta function, okay? So what we'll do is to Taylor expand, the electron energy, okay, EQ prime, about the original value EQ, okay? So we can approximate this as a delta in EP plus EQ, okay, minus EP prime minus EQ, okay, and then plus d delta dE, okay, times the difference in these two energies, okay, delta E. Okay, yeah, so times delta E. Okay, so therefore these cancel. Okay, so this is just delta of EP minus EP prime, and then plus this D delta DE. Okay, and then if we insert our expression for the change in the energy, that works out to electron velocity dotted into P minus P prime. Okay, so we get these two terms, okay? This delta function, and then also then this derivative of a delta function. And just remember, whenever you see a derivative of, of some Dirac delta function, what does that mean? It just means that some point later on, you'll have to do some integration by parts, right? Okay. Okay, good. So I'm skipping over a lot of stuff. So the integral over the electron distribution function in the end will just give us a number density for electrons. Okay. We'll also though have a term of of the integral of the electron distribution function multiplied by electron velocity. Okay, so therefore, therefore, this term will then give us something like electron number density times velocity. Okay, so then, schematically, all of this reduces to something like, C of F will look something like, electron density times, again, Thompson cross-section from this amplitude squared. Okay. And then again, times, also these integrals, G3P prime, a bunch of stuff, Okay, and then the important pieces, okay, will be this difference of f of p. Okay. And then again, right, the what I just wrote here. Okay, so delta of EP minus EP prime minus d delta DE evaluate at the same argument times V electron P minus P prime. Okay, the next step, you know, that you would do is to then insert our the expressions we derived last time for the perturbed distribution functions. Okay, so if you recall, that looks something like F was the unperturbed F minus E df dE multiplied by this by the temperature perturbation theta. Okay, and then if we insert all of this in and keep only the first order terms, what this all boils down to eventually is the following expression. Okay, so all this boils down to C of F works out to minus E df dE, okay, NE sigma T multiplied by a bunch of terms that now, I'll have to define for you because I skipped over the derivation. Okay, so theta 0 minus theta p plus ve dot p hat. Okay, so what are these terms? Okay, yeah, so first of all, this f0, that's just the unperturbed photon distribution function, and e is the electron number density, sigma t is the Thomson cross-section, okay? This theta of p, that's just the photon perturbation, discussed last time. Ve is the electron fluid velocity we discussed last time, right? So last time you were very disturbed by this ven. It's that same thing. Okay, the new term is this theta zero, which is called the photon monopole, which is defined just as the angle average of theta. So this theta zero is 1 over 4 pi integral of, theta as a function of E and P hat over all possible angles. Okay, and so again,
Those distributions are not baryon distributions, electron distributions, because like we're talking about there is a photon with momentum P prime, a photon with momentum P.
That's right, scattering off of some electron.
So they're baryon distributions.
So these are gonna be the electron distributions, right.
So
these thetas will come from expanding these into the unperturbed and perturbed pieces.
Electrons, not for photons.
No, okay, sorry. So yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, right, sorry. You know, this is all very fast. P always meant photons and Q meant electrons. Yeah.
P is photons.
Yeah. Again, right. So I mean, yes. Again, I was really zooming through this sketch. Right. The purpose of this is just to point out, the important approximations that are being made. Okay, right. So if you want to now actually work this out yourself, I would just suggest following Dodelson's derivation. He skips over some of these, some of these approximations that I'm pointing out here. Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay, good. So therefore, this is the right-hand side of the photon Boltzmann equation. Okay, so good. So now what we'll do now is to compare this to the left-hand side. So then let me write that out again. Okay. Yeah, that saved, I think, like a good half an hour. So hopefully that was worth it. Okay, so to remind you, the left-hand side for photons was this minus E df dE The following expression we derived late last time, d theta dt plus p hat over a d theta dxi plus p hat over a d psi dxi plus d phi dt. Okay, so then all of this equals this. Okay, right, you know, so one thing you can see immediately is that both left-hand side and right-hand side, you know, so both sides have this common factor of this d, you know, of this e df de. Okay, and so therefore, you know, that factor can be canceled. Okay, good. So now we've worked out the full collisional Boltzmann equation for the photons. Okay, and so now given the full Boltzmann equation, we can now repeat the exercise we did last time, you know, where we, you know, where we took moments of the Boltzmann equation to derive fluid equations. Okay, so before we had taken moments of the collisionless Boltzmann equation. Okay, so now we can take moments of the collisional Boltzmann equation, okay, you know, to derive fluid equations for the photon fluid. Okay, so for example, so if we take, you know, the integral of, you know, df dt, okay, over all possible momenta, what does this give us again? Mm-hmm, right, yeah, dn dt. Okay, so therefore then taking the integral of the right-hand side, okay, it'll give us, physically, what does it give us?
What is it?
Taking the integral of the right-hand side, the collisional term. Okay, what's the physical interpretation of this integral over all possible momenta? So again, this is the photon Boltzmann equation, right? Okay. So it's telling us, so it's telling us how the number of photons at that location is being changed by interactions, right? Okay, good. So then let's take our right-hand side, this expression here, and then let's take the integral over all possible momenta. Okay, so. Okay, so then that'll work out to, okay, so again, the same factor g, integral of e df de, okay, n e sigma t, theta naught minus theta of p, plus v dot p hat, okay, now integrated over all possible momenta. Okay, so let's first do the angular part of this integral. Okay, so okay, good. So we have three terms here. Okay, this monopole theta p and v dot p hat. Okay, So first let's do the angular part. So this is d squared p hat, and afterwards then we'll have our p squared dp. Okay, so for the p hat integral. Okay. What do we get for the integral of this term over all possible p hats? Zero, okay? What do we get for the integral of this term over all possible p hats?
That should also be zero because theta zero minus theta zero.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, so this will just give us the monopole, okay, times 4 pi. This is the monopole. Integrated over all angles gives us 4 pi monopole. So therefore, this minus this cancels, giving us 0. Okay, so therefore, the integral of the right-hand side over all possible momenta gives us, in total, 0. Okay? Why does it give us 0 physically? What's the physical interpretation of that? Why has the number of photons at this location not changed? Even accounting for all these interactions with the electrons.
It's just elastic. They're not like absorbed or like.
Exactly, okay? This process that we have been considering, this process doesn't change the number of photons, okay? So therefore then it's not surprising that what we get in the end preserves the number density of photons. Okay, now to be clear, there are other processes besides what I've talked about here. So there are processes like Bremsstrahlung, there are processes like two-photon scattering that can change the number of photons. But at these temperatures that I'm talking about, okay, so temperatures of like, you know, 1 electron volt, those processes are, you know, are in general negligible, okay? So at these times, the number of photons is basically unchanged.
Did we ever solve this equation to find the evolution of like theta, like putting that equal to that, and then like solve it for the evolution of theta, and then?
You're gonna be doing that, that's right.
And then when we do this, it doesn't depend on the initial distribution at all?
Yes, it doesn't depend.
We have some partial F0, partial E there, and partial F0, partial E there, and it's going to like,
Yeah, that's right. So the fact that this appears on both sides will turn out to then simplify, because then, you know, for the evolution equations for theta, this thing will cancel.
It just depends on the amount of perturbation that we add. Is it to be expected?
Yeah, okay, good. So this is happening because, as I said before, in this regime, this Thompson scattering of the photons doesn't change the photon energy very much, okay? Yeah, so the perturbation, therefore, so for this reason, this theta becomes basically independent of E, okay? Yeah, okay, good. So again, this is only all...
distribution that is very, like, high energy initial distribution.
So we are, again, you know, working in this time, you know, right before recombination, okay, you know, when the electrons are still, you know, scattering a lot with the photons, preserving kinetic equilibrium, right? So therefore, the photon distribution is close to thermal, right? Okay, yeah, so all this is still working in the regime where perturbations about the mean unperturbed universe are small, which means that the distribution function is very close to thermal, yeah. Okay, half an hour. Okay, good. So we saw that the number density of photons hasn't changed. Okay. Okay. Similarly, if we repeated this integral of the Boltzmann equation, and then multiplied by E, okay, what's the physical meaning of this integral? You know, same as last time. Yeah, d rho dt. Okay. So then similarly, we can then insert an E here. Okay. Then to figure out how does rho evolve over time for the photon field. Okay, so let's do the same thing. Good. Do you all see why it's zero? Okay, because the exact same argument applies. Doing the angular integral kills this piece, and similarly also kills this piece. Okay, and then physically, why did it have to be zero? Right, okay, we didn't change the photon energies. Yes, okay, good. So our process conserves photon number, also conserves photon energies. And that's why dN dt, d rho dt, for our collision term, work out to zero.
Wait, sorry, quick question. I guess I didn't ask this before, but is there there's no p hat dependence in the energy? Because if there was, like,
So again, think of E and P hat as coordinates in phase space, the same way that X are coordinates in configuration space. Okay, yeah, so for some photon, that photon has some location, X, and has some energy and some direction it's moving in. Okay, right. What we're asking is how many photons there are at that location moving at that direction with that energy.
Okay,
so theta are functions of E, P hat, X, time, all these things, all right? Okay, yeah. Okay, good. So we've derived things that should make intuitive sense. Let's do one more example. Instead of multiplying this by E, if we instead multiply by the momentum, okay? So by momentum I mean, let's say, P hat. Okay, so that'll then correspond to the rate of change of the momentum flux. right? Okay, so so then similarly, we can then work out on the right-hand side doing the same thing, multiplying by p and p hat. Let me write this more simply. And then another p, p hat. Okay, and actually, right, so since we're, you know, since we're focusing on photons, p is just equal to e. Okay, so I'll just write this as e squared. Okay. Okay, so now does this vanish if we apply the same reasoning as before, right? Yeah, you can see that it won't, right? Because this term, for example, now we have two powers of p, so therefore it doesn't vanish. Okay, right. Okay, so working this out is really easy. I think, though, in the interest of time, I will just jump to the answer, okay? And so if we multiply by momentum and then take the integral of the collision term, what we get is the following expression, okay? Yeah, so what we get is that, yeah, so g times integral of the collision term multiplied by p, p hat, integrated over all momenta. Okay, so this works out to the following expression, 4/3 rho of photon and e sigma t. V electron minus 3 theta 1 I. Okay, so let me define what all these terms are. So this rho 0, this is the unperturbed energy density of photons. Okay, this is the energy, this is the number density of electrons. This is the Thomson cross section. This is the mean electron fluid velocity at that location, okay? And then this is the photon dipole, okay, which is defined similarly to the photon monopole. So this photon dipole is defined, as a similar moment. So it's 1/4 pi angle average of theta multiplied by p hat. Oh, right. Okay, good. So this was the right-hand side. The left-hand side, again, was the time derivative of the momentum flux for the photons. Okay? The momentum density of the photons. Okay, so the point here just is that, okay, right, so therefore then there is a net injection, there is a net flux of momentum into the photons from these collisions with the electrons. Okay? Just one thing to note about notation, okay? You know, so here we are using delta t over t theta as our, as our photon perturbation, right? You know, if we instead had defined like the photon overdensity delta, the photon velocity v, okay, then in this expression, this 3 times dipole just would have been 3 times. This term would have just been the bulk velocity of the photons. Okay, so therefore, physically, you know what we know. I mean, like no, like no. So what happens is that the rate at which the photon momentum density changes is proportional to the difference in velocities between the electrons and the photons. Okay, which intuitively that should make sense, right? You know, in the mean rest frame, in the mean rest frame of the electrons. Okay, there can't be any net momentum imparted to the photons. Okay, and also then vice versa. Okay, good. Okay, right. So yeah. So the point was that yeah. So right. So there can be a net flux of momentum density into the photon fluid. We can make that net flux, however, zero just by setting the photon dipole appropriately, right? You know, so if we make this photon dipole large enough to cancel the electron velocity at that location, we can make this net flux zero, okay? And all that means physically just is moving into the mean rest frame of the photons. So does that make sense? Okay, you know, so physically we just have like all these photons flying everywhere, okay? You know, if there's like a net velocity for the photons, that looks to us as if there was a net dipole on the sky in the photon, in the photon number, the photon energy.
But we need to go to the mean mass frame of each individual interactions, right? Or the mean mass frame. We have many of these interactions happening.
That's right.
And the mean mass frame of like.
And that's why this NE times V is, is what matters, right? So you weight all of the interactions by the number of electrons at that velocity. So for the electrons, there is a frame in which the net velocity of the electrons vanishes, right? There is a mean rest frame for the electron fluid. Yeah. Okay. And so what I'm saying is that, so in that frame, if there is an overall photon dipole, okay, that'll then, act to push on the electrons, okay? Or conversely, in the frame in which the photon dipole vanishes, if there's a mean velocity of electrons, that'll act to push on the photons, right? Okay, yeah, so all that matters, again, just is, in a sense, the relative velocity between the electrons and the photons. Okay, good, right. Okay, yeah, and so as I was saying, okay, right, so therefore, if there is this relative velocity, that can act to generate a momentum flux for the photons, okay? And so where is that flux coming from? It's coming from the electrons, right? Okay, so the next thing we'll do then is to talk about the electrons and the ions, okay? Okay, so again, let's focus on times just before recombination when we have lots of free electrons, lots of free ions, floating around. Okay, so at those times, the rate of Coulomb interactions between the charged ions, the charged electrons, okay, that rate of Coulomb interactions is so fast that we can think of the electrons and ions, as making up a tightly coupled single fluid. Okay? So we'll call this tightly coupled fluid just the baryon field. Okay? Okay, so baryons therefore mean electrons and also now the ions. Okay, and they're tightly coupled together because of the very frequent Coulomb interactions between them. Okay, so good. So now let's work out then the Boltzmann equation for the baryons. Okay, and again, the form is the same. So df dt is some collision integral. Okay, the left-hand side was that complicated expression that we worked out in previous lectures, right? So it involved things like, partial f, partial t, partial f, partial x, derivatives of the metric potentials, and so on. And the right-hand side, again, is this collision term. Because we are treating the electrons and ions as a single fluid, okay, Coulomb interactions, therefore, don't enter into the collision term. So therefore, then the dominant interaction, the dominant collisions, again, will be Compton scattering off of the photons. Okay, okay, good. So, right, so then in the same way that we took moments of the Boltzmann equation to derive fluid equations for the photons, for the dark matter, okay, we can similarly now derive fluid equations for the baryons, again, the same procedure, just by taking moments of the Boltzmann equation, this Boltzmann equation for the baryons, okay? So for example, the left-hand side, okay, we saw before for the dark matter, okay, so left-hand side gave us, expressions like d rho dt plus 1 over a divergence of q plus 3h, d phi dt, rho plus p, okay? That was the, that was the integral of the left-hand side multiplied by energy, okay? For the right-hand side, what will we get for the baryons? Okay, accounting just for this Compton scattering off of the photons.
For the right-hand side?
Mm-hmm. Zero? Yeah, it'll be zero for the same reason that for the photons it was zero. Okay, because content scattering, I mean, right, you know, because content scattering, that doesn't change the energies to, you know, of the baryons to lowest order. Okay? Okay, similarly for the momentum density, okay, you know, so taking, you know, so taking the integral of this multiplied by pp hat, okay, you know, so in your homework, again, you know, so you guys will show that the left-hand side works out to dq dt plus 4hq plus 1 over a divergence of the stress tensor. I'll just write it schematically like that. Plus 1 over a rho plus p times gradient of psi. Okay, and then all this will then equal the integral on the right-hand side of the collision term. So C of F, P, P hat, D3P over 2 pi cubed. Okay? And so, can you see this? Or yeah, okay. Yeah, so we could now go through the same long derivation as before for the photons, okay? However, though, so we already know what this integral works out to. And so what does it work out to?
Minus
what we got for the photons, right? Okay, good. So, yeah, so then writing this out, this works out to, I'll write it over here. 4/3 rho naught NE sigma T, and now 3 dipole minus B. Okay? And now just to be careful, let me just write this as rho photon instead of rho zero, just to be clear that rho naught here means the unperturbed photon density. Okay? And similarly here, I'll write this as V baryon. Okay? Treating the electrons as being tightly coupled with the ions. Okay, good. So that's our momentum equation for the baryons. Now, so at these times we're talking about, right, you know, so again, temperatures over like, you know, 0.3 electron volts, the baryons are highly non-relativistic. Okay, so what that means is that their pressure is negligible compared to their energy density, right? Their momentum flux is basically just, you know, mass time, I mean, a number density times mass times velocity. Okay, so, right, so yes, what I'm saying is that this Q we can write as, so Q was rho baryon plus P baryon times V, which is approximately equal to rho baryon times V. Okay, so there. Okay, right. So therefore, then, we can reduce this complicated expression to something much simpler. Let me write it out here. Okay, so for the baryons, all this reduces down to dV dt plus HV plus 1 over a gradient of psi equals 4/3 rho photon over rho baryon NE sigma T, and then again that expression, 3 photon dipole minus velocity of the baryons. Okay, so that was a whirlwind derivation of all of the evolution equations for all the species. Okay, so we've done the dark matter field, photon field, and the baryon field. Neutrinos are also, you know, a similar expression. Okay, so good. So now we have everything we need in principle. So let me just remind you of all of these expressions. Okay, just to have them all in one place. Thanks. Okay, so for the photons, we had the following expression. We had d theta dt plus p hat over a theta dxi plus p hat over a d psi dx. Okay, and then all this equal the collision term, so Ne sigma t monopole minus theta of p plus v dot p. Okay, so that was our so that was our evolution equation for the photons. For the dark matter, so here I'll write this as photons. Okay, for the dark matter, we previously derived the following evolution equation. So we derived that the dark matter dt plus 1 over a divergence of the dark matter velocity plus 3 d phi dt. Okay. And then for dark matter, there were no collisions, so the right-hand side was 0. Okay, dark matter velocity behaved this way, so dv dt plus hv, I'll call this capital D, dark matter, plus 1 over a gradient of psi, again equals 0. Okay. And then for baryons, we had a very similar equation. Okay, so for the baryons, we had d delta baryon dt plus 1 over a divergence of baryon velocity plus 3 d phi dt. And then the right-hand side, even though there were, the right-hand side was still zero, even though there were collisions, because again, these interactions don't change the number of photons, of baryons. And then finally, for the velocities, dv dt plus hv baryon plus 1 over a gradient of psi. And now we have a non-zero right-hand side, 4/3 rho photon over rho baryon, Ne sigma t multiplied by 3 dipole minus b baryon. Okay, good. We could also write down similar equations for the neutrinos. Okay, anyway, so good. So now we have this complete set of coupled evolution equations for all the different species. Okay, photons, dark matter, baryons. Okay, so therefore now are we done? You know, so now can we just now, you know, take these, take these equations, plug them into, plug them into some computer and then just evolve? Do we have every term here that we need?
This includes interactions, right?
Yeah, that's right. We have the interactions now between the baryons and the photons. Okay, so you can see that one of the driving terms here will be things like these metric potentials. Right, but we haven't yet said how to compute the metric potentials from these perturbations. Okay, so that'll be the next thing that we work out. Okay, and so how do we work that out? We just use the Einstein equations, right? Okay. So we had our expression for, for the metric. So all we do, just is to plug in that metric into our Einstein equations. Okay, so to remind you, the Einstein equations, g mu nu equals 8 pi g t mu nu. Okay, to remind you, we had previously written down an expression for the stress energy tensor in terms of our distribution functions. Okay, so before we had written down that t mu nu, we could write as g times the integral over the distribution function of p mu, p nu over e, integrated over all possible momenta. Okay, and then previously we had shown how the components of the four momentum were related to our new variables e and p hat, right? So we had seen before that the time component of the four momentum is 1 minus psi times e, and we had seen that the space part of the four momentum was 1 minus phi over a p hat. Okay, so then if we plug in these expressions into our expression for the stress energy tensor, we can then work out all of the, all of the components of the stress energy tensor, right? So for example, the time part, t00, is what we said before, so it's minus g integral of f e d3p over 2 pi cubed. Which is just minus rho, as we said before, okay? The space part isn't quite as easy to work out, so Tij is g integral of f, p squared over e, p hat I, p hat j. Okay, d3p over 2 pi cubed. Okay, so the trace of this, of course, is just the pressure that we saw before, right? So Tii is of course, just 3p. And we had seen before that for our unperturbed universe, okay, the stress tensor was just purely isotropic. That is the only non-zero component was just this isotropic pressure. For the unperturbed universe. But now in general, though, for our perturbed universe, the stress tensor can now have parts that are not isotropic, okay? And so we call that, in general, anisotropic stress, okay? So we'll define this as the tensor pi ij, which is defined as tij minus the isotropic part, minus p delta ij.
As general as you can get for any sort of anisotropy.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Okay. Yeah. So for now, we're being very general. Okay. So in the perturbed universe, terms like this can be non-zero. Terms like T0i can also be non-zero in general. Right. Okay. And so what this means is now, so now in our Einstein equations, we'll have a lot more terms we'll have to consider, okay? Now, So previously, for the left-hand side, of the Einstein equations, so previously we had taken the metric tensor, perturbed it, and then decomposed the metric perturbations into scalars, vectors, and tensors, okay? So similarly here now, we'll do the same thing, okay? So what we'll do is to consider very general perturbations to the stress energy tensor and then decompose them into scalars, vectors, and tensors, okay? So to remind you, I'll leave this. So our previous expression for the stress tensor was the following. Okay, so previously we had written T mu nu as rho plus P times U mu U nu plus G mu nu times P. Okay, and so now we'll generalize this expression now to allow for perturbations. Okay, so you know, so we'll let rho go to rho plus delta rho. We'll let P go to P plus delta P. We'll let this this fluid four velocity unperturbed go to the perturbed plus delta U. And also we'll allow for this possible pi ij, and this possible anisotropic stress. Okay. Okay, good. So the perturbations to the stress energy tensor we'll consider are delta rho, delta p, delta u, and pi ij. Okay. Now, the stress energy tensor is a four-dimensional symmetric tensor. So in general, it has 10 degrees of freedom. Okay. We have delta rho is 1, delta p is 2. 2 degrees of freedom. Delta U, you might think has 4 degrees of freedom, but it doesn't. It only has 3 degrees of freedom.
Delta P is 2.
No, 1 and 1 is 2.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Okay. This delta U has 3 degrees of freedom, not 4. The reason is that this 4 velocity has unit norm. Okay. So for example, the unperturbed 4 velocity, U unperturbed, is just 1 0 0 0, right? Okay. Okay. The perturbation keeps the perturbed velocity as being still unit norm. So therefore, this perturbation has 4 components, 1 constraint. So therefore 3 degrees of freedom. So we have 1, 2, 5, which means that pi ij has to have 5 degrees of freedom in it. Okay. Right. Okay, so now let's decompose these into, actually, let me say some more about the four velocity perturbation. So this has 3 degrees of freedom. So I'll write those degrees of freedom as some spatial vector v, okay? And so our perturbed velocity I will write as, so u mu I'll write as 1 minus psi, and then vi over a. Okay? And you can verify that this has unit norm. Okay. Good. So this pi ij has 5 degrees of freedom. Okay? Right. I mean, actually, most generally, we could write this as pi mu nu. Okay, but because we only have 5 leftover degrees of freedom, we can choose the form of this pi mu nu, and so I'll choose it to be purely spatial. Okay, which means that I'll set pi 0 0, and also pi 0 i to 0. Okay, that then leaves just a spatial pi ij that would have 6 degrees of freedom. We only have 5. Okay. And so one more choice then is to set the trace of pi ij to 0. So I'll set pi ii also to 0. Okay? And so now my pi ij, this traceless spatial symmetric tensor, now has 5 degrees of freedom. Okay, so we have 5 plus 3 plus 1 plus 1, 10 degrees of freedom in the stress energy tensor. Okay, good. So now let's now decompose these into scalars, vectors, and tensors. Okay, and so we'll do the same thing that we did before for the metric perturbations. Okay. Okay, so first off, delta rho, delta p are both obviously spatial scalars. Okay, this V vector, okay? Again, I can write that as the sum of a gradient and a curl, right? Okay, so therefore this V vector, I'll write as the gradient of some scalar, and I'll choose that scalar to be written as capital V, okay? And then the remaining degrees of freedom, I'll write as some V twiddle, okay? Good, and then like before, you know, like with the metric, I will now neglect the vector degree, you know, on these vector degrees of freedom, okay? Like in the metric we did. Actually, let me write this as 1 over A because this is a co-moving derivative. Okay, similarly, now let's decompose our pi ij into scalars, vectors, and tensors, okay? So since we set the trace to 0, there is no trace in pi ij, okay? And so therefore the remaining scalar degree of freedom is just the second derivative of some scalar, okay? So we can write that as pi ij is 1 over a squared di dj minus 1/3 delta ij squared. And so I'll write that scalar quantity as q. Okay? There's no trace. Good. We could also have, we can have two vector degrees of freedom in this, right? You know, we could write, something like, you know, di vector j, okay? Right, you know, very similar to what we did before with the metric perturbations, okay? So there's two vector degrees of freedom, and then also then two tensor degrees of freedom, okay? Good, so in total, we have delta rho, delta p, capital V, capital Q. So we have these four scalar degrees of freedom. Okay, we have this V twiddle, and also then the vector part of pi ij, so four vector degrees of freedom. And then we have two tensor degrees of freedom in pi ij. Okay? Now, if you recall, for our decomposition of the metric tensor, we initially also had four scalar, four vector, two tensor degrees of freedom, okay? So all that matches, right? I mean, it has to, because in both cases, all we had was the same, you know, was the same decomposition of a symmetric four-dimensional tensor. Okay, now if you recall though, so for our decomposition of the metric tensor, we said that four of those 10 degrees of freedom were just gauge artifacts, okay? So four of those 10 were not dynamical, okay? So here, for our 10 degrees of freedom, the analog of that will be that, you know, four of these degrees of freedom will not couple to any, you know, any dynamical degrees of freedom in the metric. Okay. So right. So in total, we'll have two scalar degrees of freedom in T mu nu coupling to scalar degrees of freedom in the metric. We'll have potentially two vector degrees of freedom coupling to two vector degrees of freedom in the metric, and then two tensor degrees of freedom in pi ij coupling to our two tensor degrees of freedom in the metric, i.e. the gravitational waves, okay? Good, so to see which of these degrees of freedom couple to which of the metric perturbations, we just have to evaluate Einstein's equations, plugging in T mu nu, plugging in our G mu nu. If you'll bear with me we can stop here, but it would be nice just to write down the expression. Is that okay? Okay, good. So then let's just write down our perturbation. So delta T 0, 0 is minus delta rho. Delta T 0 I is rho naught plus P naught VI. And delta Tij equals delta P, delta Ij plus pi Ij. Okay, good. So then these are the components of the right-hand side of Einstein's equations. The left-hand side is just the Einstein tensor. Okay, Let me just write out what those are. Okay, so the perturbed part of the time-time part of Einstein's equations works out to, two over a squared, grad squared of phi plus six h squared psi, minus h d phi dt. Okay, and then all this then equals 8 pi g t 0 0, which is just minus 8 pi g rho. Okay, good. So I can divide both sides by 2. Okay, so this looks a lot like Poisson's equation, vaguely, right? So I have something that looks like grad squared phi, okay, right? So this is co-moving, so therefore 1 over a squared makes it a proper physical grad squared. Right-hand side, I have 4 pi g rho, but this sign is wrong, right? But I mentioned before, that this phi metric potential looks like minus phi Newtonian, right? However, though, we also have these extra relativistic terms that were not present in, Newtonian gravity. Okay. Crucially, they involve the Hubble expansion rate. Okay, and for that reason, these terms will become unimportant on small scales. Okay, so on scales small compared to the Hubble radius, okay, this expression becomes very close to just Poisson's equation, defining phi as minus phi Newtonian. Okay, last thing I'll mention is the time-space part. Okay, so delta di0 works out to 2 over a d by dxi of d phi dt minus h psi. Okay, and then all this we set equal to 8 pi g t 0 I. Okay, and over here we have an expression for 8 pi g t 0 I. Okay, so good. So then using this, we can then derive an expression for this, which we can then plug into the first Einstein equation. Let me do this more slowly next time, just to avoid confusing you guys. So let's just stop here with the time-time expression. For next time, we'll pick up with the time-space part, okay? And then derive, more equations relating the evolution of the metric potentials to these stress energy perturbations. Okay. So we'll stop there. Sorry for going 15 minutes over.